scene inside my head. It was dark, it was painful and cold, and sometimes on the inside I was dead of life. I've seen a lot of sights, a lot of lies, a lot of lows, a lot of highs. I've seen a lot of snakes, a lot of fakes, a lot of them take. I've seen what a lot of them make, a lot of hate.
He just told me to sit down and write. In each line that I wrote, there was always a big story. There was always a story. There's either a story from a dream, or a story from family, or a story from about country, a story from the campaign. It opened up a lot of conversation.
Yeah, we ba inyira, and a man in greeter, yo. Yeah, we ba inyira. People ask me for my story, but my story is your story. My feet are in the dirt, and the dirt, it speaks in dust. And the trees, they speak in leaves, like the people speak in trust.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden. Now, I know you know that words are powerful, but what words would you choose if no one was listening and you needed to be heard? Tough, huh? Today we're bringing you a documentary called Away With Words. It's about the way that activists and marginalised people are using a new art form with an ancient history to get their voices across. We're going to meet poets who run workshops in jails and schools, a young woman writing and fighting for a community in Arnhem Land, and some social housing residents learning the art of storytelling from one of Sydney's best-known spoken word artists. And to take us on this journey is All the Best producer Maisie Cohen.
This is how we shoot back. With this assembly, we aspire to provoke not riot, but conversation. This congregation has come together to express its dissent of police matters. So, in exercising our right to be heard, the only proper police protocol is to use excessive force. Forceful words.
In July last year, a group of Broadway performers were protesting against the death of Eric Garner outside the NYPD station in Times Square, using poetry. It was activism, but with an artistic edge, and performance poetry in particular is being used as a loudspeaker for political messages around the world.
Like crustaceans, we exchange our homes and change our populations, propagate and repopulate again. We are ever changing. Asian, Eurasian, Caucasian, more patient. The more nations, the more flavors. So please come down here and save us. We have Indian engineers driving our cabs and geniuses placing placemats in their places. And they say that here you've made it.
That's Greek-Australian artist Luca Lesson. Luca runs workshops in places like Johannesburg, Hong Kong and Vietnam, and closer to home, remote communities like Tennant Creek, helping people to hone their confidence and creativity through poetry. He was back home in Melbourne when I got through to him, so we spoke on the phone.
I think a lot of the problems in the world today come from very frustrated people who don't have the words to be able to articulate exactly what they're going through and why they're even frustrated, or why they want to go and buy a, you know, awesome car, or why they feel inadequate. You know, like all these things that are just available to us if we have the ability to self-reflect and express ourselves with words in a really powerful way.
In Manangreta and Tennant Creek and other remote communities that you've been working in, is spoken word something that already exists within the cultures, or are you bringing it in for the first time?
I mean, spoken word is such an interesting thing to define, as is poetry or even as is hip-hop. You know, we're talking about storytelling. So on a very basic level, on a very, you know, human level, of course, Australia has one of the oldest storytelling cultures and one of the longest continuous storytelling cultures in existence in the world. So I can always relate it back to that. You know, there's always stories. Whenever, if a young person isn't totally understanding what I'm doing, there's always, you know, that link. And then I also can connect it to hip-hop if they still aren't sure about what I'm talking about, and, you know, talk about how some spoken word pieces rhyme, some of them don't. They don't have to, but they can. And also the impact and the power and the political nature of some of what I do is often what young people in these places are really connected with, you know, because they're just like, oh, I get it. I'm allowed to stand up and say what I really feel about the system or about this process or about my life.
If you were 17 and in need of a dream and your fiend of a father didn't even leave you in peace and he didn't have the decency to leave you some pieces, but he left you with his debt, so you started dealing some green. At least you learned to start a car without the need of a key and how to steal lollipops from that corner shop down the street. But if the cops chased you and you got roughed up and cuffed on your knees, you'd end up in a proper prison with Chopper Reed and his chiefs.
There's a lot of really good senses of humour in the bush, you know, like people really know how to make you laugh and have fun with words. In my class, I'm always encouraging the use of Indigenous languages and Indigenous Aboriginal English. I'm never kind of the English teacher that comes in and says, you have to talk like this or you have to be proper, you have to sound like me. I'm trying to help young people sound as much like themselves as possible and be proud of that.
That doesn't always mean tackling the tough topics.
People that live in tough situations, they don't always want to come to a workshop and write about, you know, all the trauma that they've been through in their whole lives. You know, like that can often be quite a privileged way of looking at things. You know, I'm going to come out and help you all write about, you know, all the shit that you're going in your life.
Spoke my words, but with your tongue.
And this body has a vessel in this chest that carries messages from my ancestors, what to do against a threat.
That's Alice Ether. She's a primary school teacher from Maningrida in the Northern Territory, 500 kilometres east of Darwin.
Maningrida is on Gunabitju land, and that's our mob from Mother's side. And all Gunabitju speak Jepana language, which is the main language here, which I was taught. Altogether, there's about 13 languages spoken in Maningrida. And once a week at school, we have a two-way learning program. So 45-minute lessons. I have the Jepana lesson in my class every Wednesday, learning the letters and sounds from the alphabet, and we sing all the songs in language. It's one of my favourite times of the week, actually.
When she's not teaching, Alice is also working on the Protect Arnhem Land campaign that she co-founded. They're a local group fighting to stop a fracking operation off the coast of Arnhem Land.
In 2012, we started the Protect Arnhem Land campaign in response to all the applications put out to explore for oil and gas across the Arnhem coastline. And there was a bit of a freak out in the community, and we all got together, came up with PAL, Protect Arnhem Land, and drafted letters and sent objection letters off to the mining ministers. So that was a lot of hard work, and I was bringing in anthropologists and traditional owners and collecting resources like videos and maps and trying to explain what it all meant to the community members.
Now she's using poetry as a new medium for her message.
I met Luca Woodford and I've seen a lot of his work in the last few years. I think the first poem I ever saw was Please Resist Me, and I got goosebumps.
Please resist me. Colonize me, compromise me, conflict me. Please don't risk me. If you see me at the airport, please come and frisk me.
I shared that a lot around the community, and very powerful piece, and I've always just been drawn to him.
We talked about collaborating. We talked about somehow using what I do to support what she's doing. And I didn't want it to be, you know, just kind of like a Facebook shout out or something that just felt like short-lived. I wanted it to be something that could actually have a real impact. Flew up there and spent 10 days there and, you know, sat down and got my head around what was happening and helped begin a process of her writing something that was powerful, that said what she needed to say.
When I see map of country, I see land, sea and family. When they see map of country, they see mining fantasies. When I see the seabed, I see sacred sites. When they see the seabed, they see dollar signs.
And this is a really nice way to just get all my thoughts down on paper. And it was good because he went through it and then we talk about everything. Yeah, this is the first full piece I've ever done that's been online and thousands of people viewing. That's never happened to me in my life, so it was very overwhelming for me.
You've been able to spread a lot of awareness about the issues around fracking. Are you hoping to achieve more, like possibly legislative change or anything like that?
We got a few mob in Darwin before a three-day meeting with Lock the Gate and other members from Arnhem Land. And a big thing we're talking about is getting sea rights. When you do look at the Land Rights Act, our rights stop at the low tide mark. So as far as the low tide goes is how much control, like, say, we have. But because we're talking about offshore fracking in the waters, we don't have a say. We can get sea rights and we have more control and more say.
People feel like they're up against such a big monster that is, you know, Papua Petroleum and Arafura Oil and Gas, you know, these two mining companies that have now teamed up to see if they can get access to saltwater country.
Did you feel, talking to people in the community, that it gave them a sense of power in a powerless situation?
Once we finished the video, we showed it to Alice's mum and, you know, to other relatives and family members. And they all, you know, some of them had tears in their eyes and were really, you know, like profoundly affected by something so beautiful that captured, you know, an emotion of a community. This is not just serious for Maningrida people. This is not just serious for Alice and her family's Wunal clan group in their country, but all the surrounding groups and all the surrounding countries and the globe itself. You know, we're looking at losing something that is absolutely priceless. And as the poem says, you know, my story is your story. We all need water, and water's under threat.
Alice is one of many people that Luke has collaborated with over the years. One of the groups he sometimes works with is the Red Room Company, based here in Sydney. Since 2002, they've been doing loads of off-the-wall stuff. Poetry on toilet doors and attached to the legs of pigeons. One project enlisted truck drivers from all over the country to write poems about life on the road. They also run workshops in prisons, but for director Joanna Featherstone, the social justice component is just an added bonus.
It definitely grew from a place of just playfulness and joy, and that's still at the heart of everything that we do. So the pleasure of poem reading and poem making and poem performing is what is the foundation for everything. And then the social justice components and the education components sort of flow from that. And that happens once you start sharing it out of, you take it out of yourself and into the community.
Hey, my name's Daniel from Sydney Mandurah, and I read his poem. The people I've lost along the way, it's hard to say they've gone away. Why did God have to take them away? I think because their soul was too strong to stay.
Share this walk in life before. Walk, don't run from you no more. Lonely these footprints in the sand, no need for no one to hold my hand. This lonely walk leads to something great. Walking in the sand alone was to be my fate.
Girl, I love the way you shine. You know I wanna make you mine. I love the way you be so kind. I love being around you all the time. You opened my eyes when I was blind. Girl, I love the way me and your spirits combine. So be strong till I do my time. Girl, keep me in your mind.
A lot of people write so much poetry in jail, and they know about what writing can do. They just haven't necessarily shared it. The hardest thing is trust in both working with the students and with inmates. And I think that you can achieve the trust if you have the right sort of poet that I work with, and you manage to get the spirit of the class early on. And I think that's an intuitive thing. That's about teaching.
My name is Gail Lee, and this is my poem, Pray to God. I sit and I pray to God to save me from this moving fog. Gets closer to me every time I sin or pollute this body of mine. I say to God, come save me, please. Please, God, put my mind at ease. The simple things are best in life, not trouble, sinning, making strife. They told me from the day I was born, I'm nothing but a troubled spawn. So hear me when I talk to you. I'm not trouble, I'm just blue. My heart gets broken all the time. Then I turn to drugs and turn to crime. I do this with all regret, and I'm sorry for hurting the people I've met.
The transformation is in a range of areas. It's within the individual poem, as you see a person who's very closed and who's been really difficult for the first 2 days, refusing to write anything. And then suddenly, they on the third day, they come to you with a poem they've written overnight. And then there's the transformation that happens with language, where you see people suddenly find their own voice in the way that they're really confident about. In prison, a lot of people have had an awful experience with language. Either it's been taken away, they don't speak their natural language. The English language is something they associate with police forms or, you know, rental bills or those sorts of things. For most of the inmates that we work with, they have never finished school, the majority haven't, and they can't read or write. And so fantastic as it is to perform a poem or to be able to speak, to get around, to get a job, you have to be able to read and write. And so poetry actually teaches you to do that in the best possible way.
As well as improving people's reading and writing skills, Joanna says the workshops can be a way for Indigenous men and women to reconnect with culture.
We've been doing this really interesting thing recently where when we find people who speak language, we ask them if they've got a dictionary or if they can write down words and translations, and we publish that in the Unlocked book. It's a way of making a living archive of language that can be passed on.
No, I'll just read it all and
Where are you from?
Aran Korokoi. The venomous laws do not cure us from the harsh reality of our past, but starves us from our families. Some are lucky and live protected, happy lives, while others grow on a bed of lies. How does a child know good from bad when both parents are mad? It's sad a child will grow and live a life its parents sow.
Oh, deadly.
We got poems translated. We found someone who spoke, it seemed he spoke about 30 Indigenous languages, but Aboriginal languages, but he translated, I think, four different poems from English into the language of the speaker, which were for these young men. They'd never heard their language spoken, let alone their poems translated.
I'm at a workshop at the New South Wales Writers' Centre in Rozelle. It's part of a bigger program called Social Housing Stories, where residents of community housing are learning to tell their stories on their own terms. They've already had two sessions on blogging and screenwriting, and today's workshop is performance poetry with Candy Royale.
One thing that we do as writers is like also to get things flowing is try to engage with other art forms. So we're going to be doing a couple of exercises that center around that as well. The first is writing to music. If you're feeling like blocked or blank, then you can just pause and just listen to the music. I think that you'll find that the music will evoke some form of writing for you, okay? Most people have a really great fear of public speaking, but then that's exacerbated tenfold when you make them write something really personal and then have them share that.
Sisters Marnie and Sasha were at the workshop with their mum. They said it was even harder to write something personal with their family around.
I felt a mixture of probably like relief of getting it off, you know, getting stuff out, but then a little bit of shame around it. So mixed feelings, definitely.
I felt very censored. I did. And that's why I chose to talk about the drug experience, because that I felt I can expose more easily than writing about, say, my mother's mental health or how that affects children growing up.
Standing, buckling, melting into the pavement. Hollow eyes darting furtively. Central station bustles. Tasting, smelling the desperation within. Just give me some fucking money, she silently screams. Please help me, please, her eyes beg.
I think at the end of the day, A, having a creative outlet
and be all that experience and mess and carnage. To become something is good, is a positive thing.
When she's not running these workshops, Candy writes and performs her own poetry.
I identify as queer, obviously as a female, and as an Australian Arab. And so being a marginalised voice meant that even more I wanted to be heard. And poetry is a great tool for that. I am now in a position of privilege because I do get to perform in front of, you know, thousands of people every year, and I am heard and I have a voice.
She's toured her work through Australia and overseas, and well understands how intimidating it can be to get started.
The initial poetry that I was writing was really, it really was appalling. It was terrible. It was. I've got suitcases, literally suitcases filled with shit poetry under my bed.
The shadows drift closer. She's been seeking something in the eyes of others, brown, blue, even green, searching for some sense of a collective humanity, wondering if there's any unhindered intimacy left. She tries to hold their gaze with a need to create heat burning in her. She
knows time has no... Luca, Joanna and Candy are all hoping to change the way people think about poetry. That means heading into schools and showing kids that poetry doesn't just live on the pages of their books. Joanna says part of that is letting kids know they can be poets too.
To be a poet, you don't necessarily have to have gone to university. And that's something that you get from the school students or that we work with, is their amazement that they potentially could be a poet, and thinking that a poet is somebody that, I don't know, comes from this particular world. Poetry for me is about language and experience, and so therefore the more experience you have in different forms and walks of life, the more interesting things can be. In schools, when you look at the syllabus, still people either read a lot of dead white poets, and even other groups that go into schools, they bring poetry by poets who are no longer alive, that students don't necessarily grow up seeing the variety of contemporary poetry.
And for people like Luca, that excitement goes both ways.
Poets kind of are just really excited to go into a school and hear what young people are able to produce. You know, like, we get excited by words, and inevitably a kid is going to say something that's just so awesome that you just wish that you'd written it. It happens all the time, you know. Kids are really tapped into a clarity that isn't clouded by social mores and guilt and whatever else that we get once we finish high school. Maybe a lot of us were weird students, you know. Maybe a lot of us were the nerdy poetry kid in the corner. And we find it kind of cool to go back to schools and, you know, like, be able to help young people that were as frustrated as we were with the education system.
And suddenly they see this sort of poetry, which is people expressing things that they've felt. It's much more accessible. To perform means that I make it more accessible. I take poetry back to the people, right? If it's just in a book, sitting on dusty bookshelves, who's accessing that?
Alice's poem is finding its way to people far beyond her community of Maningrida. Recently, the video made its way into a classroom on the East Coast.
I got an email from the school in Coogee, a teacher who screened it to her Year 6 class. It was such a beautiful email. She'd had a class of 30 students, and she's like, they're so boisterous and can't sit down. And she said it was the first time she had the whole class engaged and, you know, asking questions and standing up afterwards and, you know, on a justice kind of level. The poems to create that dialogue, to get people talking, to get kids asking questions. And it's done that. It's doing that.
May your pen grace the page at the same pace as your brain. May your grey matter from now on no longer be grey. May you mean every word that you say. And from now on, may writing your lines be the way that you pray. get up, step up, never let up. Get your setup, set up, get recording. Get stories pouring, ignoring your calling and calling you boring. It's boring, you need to be touring. What are you doing? You're basically stewing. No space for daydreaming, no place for that feeling. No place for pacing the building. No place for facing a ceiling or chasing a feeling. No way that it's dealing. Your brain that is stealing. And there will be no change to you, and there'll be no change to that ceiling. I'm basically feeling art isn't hard. What's hard is your heart, and it starts in the past. But the past is in the past, so love who you are. Pass the rush of blood to your arteries blast, and let the blood rush to your arm, and let your artistry start. May your pen express upon the page every feeling you're in. May your white page yang love your black pen yin. May the ball in your ballpoint roll, cause that's the point of the ball. And if we can't make our points, then what's the point of it all? May the lead in your lead pencil lead you astray. We spell it L-E-A-D, cause we've made leaders this way. I know it's hard but easy to say, but I mean what I say when I say, mean what you say. Potentially my pencil will be the deftest thing you've ever seen. Adept at expressing everything that you've never seen. Especially when you question me, my pencil man, she gets to me. Comes to me and comforts me and takes me out to lunch. You see, we have a cup of coffee, for I know it, she's on top of me. She's rocking and she's rolling me, we're touching uncontrollably. She likes to switch the roles on me. I'm writing her, she's writing me. It's life as I desire to be. It's right that she's my wife to be. Takes me to her bed of white. We try it in the dead of night. Pages till we get it right. We make love between those sheets. May your pen grace the page at the same pace as your brain. May your grey matter from now on no longer be grey. May you mean every word that you say. And from now on may writing your lines be the way that you pray. Writing your lines be the way that you pray.
That was spoken word artist Luca Lesson ending Maisie Cohen's documentary Away With Words. All the music used in this piece was written and performed by workshop participants or the poets who run them. Head to allthebestradio.com for photos from workshops with Red Room and the Social Housing Stories Project and a video of Ellis performing her poem. This episode of All The Best was produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with Triple R and SYN in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan. My co-host is Pip Rasmussen and I'm Michael Bryden. All The Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.